Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Riskier letting his shoulder take the brunt of some of those hits. Maybe you don't want to do that, but at least not taking the full brunt of them the way Grizzlick did. And, you know, they're on to them, and the Blues just never changed their approach. They just kept playing that way, winding up in the box, winding up out of position, and next thing you know, the Bruins are getting plenty of offenses on zone time.
Yeah, that Tuukka's best work was on that first penalty kill
right.
for Boston. There were a couple good saves there. Perron had a backhander. Again, he kind of put it in his midsection, but again, it's Rask in excellent position. There was another one. He stopped Tarasenko on the circle. He didn't cheat. There was a chance Tarasenko was going to feed that cross ice, and he did not. Yeah.
Did they have an odd man rush the whole night? Even that you can remember, like maybe one.
No, I mean, I was texting with a few buddies last night, and it was we brought up Rask, and it was just Rask has never felt like a story through the first three games of this series.
Right.
It's I said I basically haven't even noticed him.
That's why he's the Conn Smythe winner, because he's not doing anything.
Well, I mean, in previous rounds, you've noticed him.
Right.
He's been a story, but he's been that good.
It's almost like he got the Conn Smythe, and now he's just
coasting. He doesn't need to be that good through three games. I mean, he hasn't needed to do much of anything.
Actually, I just thought of the one kind of odd man rush, and your man, John Moore, slowed it down, shut it down, waited, you know, held up his man so Backerway could get back, make it a two-on-two. And
that was Calvin's column this morning, by the way. Moore is great. It was
John Moore is great,
sentence.
And Ken Laird is dumb. That was my column. And then I went to bed.
Well, no, I mean, to Pete's point, you and I were watching game two. Well, you were watching game two at the Garden. I was over your shoulder because I had no seat. And in the third period, Rask had a couple of good saves to keep them in it for a while before they lost in overtime. And I think I said, that's the first time I've noticed Tuukka tonight.
Right.
He had gone 2.5 periods without really being a story. But Ken Campbell, the Hockey News, had a piece up this morning, which you had posted a couple hours ago, Matt, suggesting Tory Krug could be in the conversation for Conn Smythe winner with Tuukka Rask. And it's actually a pretty good point. I mean, not just his four-point night last night, but in terms of unexpected things the entire postseason, Tory Krug's play has surprised me more than anything, just start
Absolutely.
To finish. And there have been games, Pete, where he's not been noticed, but I guess that's the point, at least in the first couple rounds. I thought he was going to be a major liability at times. It almost never has that happened.
Right, yeah. I mean, I said it before the series. I'm surprised that he has not been exposed. Anybody who's watched his team over the past couple of years, I mean, you appreciate the things Tory Krug does offensively, but there are certain points where he doesn't look great defensively, and that just hasn't happened in this postseason. So I still don't know if I'd put him ahead of Rask, but there's
but as you're saying, Rask has not been that busy in this cup final, so
right,
it would be a little odd.
The work that he did through the first three rounds puts him head and shoulders above anybody else, I think.
And you know what's crazy about the Krug thing is you wonder, you know, other teams watch video, and they watch video, you would assume, of the other series, and yet they continually dump the puck into Krug's corner where he can quickly move the puck, get it up ice, and you're not really going to take a beating, you know, give him a beating the way they want to do it. How come they're not throwing it to Carlo's corner? Because as good as we know Carlo is, as far as being a defensive defenseman and being strong, and he can move the puck as well, but we know he's more apt to make a gaffe with the puck, try to skate it up, have it some indecision, especially if you're bearing down on him in a Stanley Cup final game, and they keep doing the same thing over and over. It's unbelievable.
They're attacking Krug and not
They're trying to attack Krug, and they just not...
And it's Carlo's first postseason, I guess. You know, he's well beyond
and
that.
And he's played great, but clearly we've seen him. Sometimes he'll take those two strides and he'll lose the puck. He'll stumble. He's not, you know, what do they call him, Bambi, because of the way he skates sometimes with the puck. I mean, there's ways you can exploit that guy, and you never see it happen.
And it's worth pointing out too that the extra dumb crap has been targeted towards Krug a lot through the first few games. I mean, it seems like before the series they put it on the board that go after this guy, try to get under his skin.
I think Justin Williams called that in. He passed it on to the Blues.
Was it before his big hit in game one, the big hair flying hit, was it Perron that had
Perron.
Him down?
Yeah.
So, I mean, Perron has been like giving coach. He's like Berube's rat.
He's the Alex Burrows of that team.
He really
you know?
Is.
He's like,
I didn't expect that.
He can put up some numbers, but he's a dirtbag.
He used to be that. He was thought of as like the 30-goal guy, like a skill guy.
Right.
So they've tried to mold him into something else.
Well, I mean, you got to do what you got to do to stay effective, I guess, huh? Yeah. And but I mean, I said last night it's funny and ironic that the one guy who has Stanley Cup final experience on this Blues team looks like the one guy who has no idea what he's doing out there.
Well, last round they had the captain of the team chasing it's people true. Around. So this is just the effect the Bruins have on people that they just get you off your game for whatever reason. It must just be talking because we don't really see them, you know, doing the cheap shotting or doing the after the whistle stuff. It's the other team doing it. They just must be goading him into it.
Now, Perron got caught on the penalty, which led to Bergeron's power play goal in the 1-0 lead, as you say. He argued that he didn't think it was justified afterward. He and Berube both commented on that last night. It was an interference play on Carlo. They were
He decked him in the neutral zone.
Carlo dove a little bit. Yeah, I thought so, too.
But, I mean, it's still a stupid play if you're Perron. Behind the play, don't give the refs a reason to even think about calling that. And there was no reason for him to even mess with Carlo there. I think Carlo dove, but he drew the call.
And Gunnarsson got caught on that play. That really led to the whole two-on-one. He, like, jumped. He was between the circles. He was way in the offensive zone. They were playing aggressive.
Maybe he had to take
a pee. St. Louis going for the kill early. Yeah. to the bleeper, as he talked to Berube between periods of Game 2 before his power play goal. But maybe that's a reaction to Game 2. He's feeling it. You know, they bumped him up to the top defensive pairing. All right, I'm Carl Gunnarsson. I'm gonna ice this baby, and it goes the other way. And Bergeron just that is perfection, Bergeron right there. The faceoff win and the tip,
absolutely
for the first goal. Just a thing of beauty.
And just I mean, you know, they showed it on NBC and they broke it down. You watch, he was back into form as far as just his defensive play, as far as getting back and making sure that he was the third man high. And we saw them, you know, cutting. And that's a big reason why there were no odd man rushes, because he's out there doing that. And you know, David Krejci's minutes make him look like he's a fourth-line center now, but he's doing the same things too. I mean, yeah, they're not producing, and clearly Backes is maybe holding them back a little bit, and you have to wonder if at some point they would – it's almost – how do you bench Backes in this series, but by the same token, wouldn't it benefit you at this point to maybe have some fresh legs for a game? But nonetheless, that line is playing well defensively, and that's the key here right now. Everybody's playing strong defensively and getting the offense out of the defense.
Now, here's Don Cherry last night.
Oh, boy.
He talked up his boy Patrice Bergeron for Conn Smythe winner.
Grapes, we were wondering about Bergeron. You certainly saw last game he didn't take. Actually, Brian, if we have time, we should show. Yeah, he's 5-1 last we checked on draws, and he's having a good period. Obviously, he's got the 1-0
goal. MVP, I said he's MVP of the league. He's MVP of the playoff, as far as I'm concerned, right now. He doesn't have to get points. He gets a draw. He is a beauty. He's the guy, we did a feature on him. Gets the draws, towards the goals, tip-ins. He's their leader.
All right.
And they did a feature on him, so absolutely, that bumps him up a little bit.
So, I mean, that is a bulletproof argument right there. if I've ever heard one.
He is a beauty.
Have we figured out why every time Patrice Bergeron has a bad game, he must be injured? Have we figured this out yet?
Well, he had the health. He didn't.
Because he had the maintenance day.
He had a maintenance day.
Martian had a maintenance day. Krejci was sick. I mean, it's unbelievable. Every time he has a bad, and the same thing with Pastrnak. So has he healed up in the time since he was quote unquote hurt in the first round?
You don't think he's hurt?
Everybody's banged up.
Pierre asked him afterward. Tarasenko, point blank.
Yeah.
Are you hurt? And he paused and said, "Feeling good."
Well, that's just it. I mean, if you play the way he played last night, why are we going to, you know, give him the excuse of being hurt when he plays poorly? It's going to be up and down. Tarasenko's had maintenance days too. He's missed skates. Guys are playing through
stuff.
I think
if you play poorly a few games in a row and you're Patrice Bergeron and then you miss him and you have a maintenance day, I think it's fair to question whether or not he's injured.
Correct. Pete's right and you're wrong. Fair to question.
I'm not wrong because, I swear it's fair to question, but it's not the questioning of it. It's the excuse making. It's the, well, you know, Patrice is hurt. It's like, no. He can play like he played last night, then he can play through it. And if he's getting beat by Ryan O'Reilly all night on the faceoff dot, that's just the way it goes.
See, that's what I wanted more of in your column, your everything's going to be all right column. I wanted more reasons why the
first
line
of all,
was going to break out.
If that's
out,
what you wanted in a column,
mystic-
you should have written a column. Second of all, I'll write what I want to write. I don't take requests. But and third of all, I was right,
I'm
so why would I have written something
it's
different?
My opinion, it could have been a better column if you had said, everything's going to be all right.
Okay.
Brad Marchand's going to come out to walk up music from Shane Victorino because X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
Not just some mystical, well, they've done it the last three rounds, so they're
bound
to come out.
Well, no, I mean,
you,
we saw the numbers, you know, what are their numbers from games 1 and 2 and then from games 3 through the end and the rest of this whole playoffs? It takes them a couple games to get going for whatever reason. I mean, we talked about it yesterday, I think. A lot of it has to do with teams game planning for them at the beginning and just focusing on them so much, and then it takes them time to adjust and just get going. And that's what happened every time.
There have been stretches throughout this postseason where they have been quiet.
Right.
But in those stretches, they've still done well defensively. So I think the biggest concern for me was that they were getting run by the Blues' top line and top talent. You know, they through the first couple of games, they were on the ice for three goals against. So, right. I mean, that was the biggest concern for me, not the fact that they weren't producing offensively.
Yeah.
Because to put up with that because they are the shutdown.
Yeah, I mean, one of those goals came on Marchand's at least two mistakes that he made on that play, and you know he's not going to do that regularly. And the other part of it is, I think, and we'll see in Game 5, I guess, when we get back here to Boston, I still don't get this whole Tarasenko matchup, why Bruce Cassidy thinks this is their advantage.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, when Carlo and Krug were on the ice against Tarasenko last night, it worked a lot better. Now, you still saw a lot of char against it, but it's like, why would you not go with not only your best defensive pair against that line, but also the defensive pair that moves the puck the best to get it to the Bergeron line and get them going?
Yeah, I think that's a factor. Now, maybe he played a little better last night, Chara, and we're going to hear more from Don Cherry because he sees it differently than I do. But back to game two, the Tarasenko goal.
He sees things?
Yes, he does. He's a visionary. Don't mock the finest Canadian that's ever walked the face of the earth. Tarasenko's goal.
I thought that was Damian Cox.
Damian Cox is good. Now, that's a good columnist. Drama. You're always talking about him. Nobody talked about the Calvin column.
No,
everybody
right,
talked about it.
The Tarasenko goal, which Marchand got criticized for, and aptly so, right? It's a breakdown, they basically double-teamed whoever. It was Tarasenko coming at the red line. But Chara, if you rewind it a bit, played it very conservatively at the blue line. He started to backpedal. He didn't pinch.
Yeah.
And if Krug is out there, maybe he does. Maybe he is a little more aggressive, and it never gets to that point. So I thought Chara shared some blame in that whole sequence as it was. And going through the first three rounds, Krug and Carlo were the shutdown pair on every top line. Right? So what changed about this series? Why did they decide, okay, Char is the guy against Tarasenko?
If I was in St. Louis, I could ask Bruce Cassidy that question.
Nobody's asked him that
yet. Nobody's asked
him
that question once.
That's kind of strange. I mean, because I think Cassidy would probably answer what they're thinking.
Absolutely he would.
Now, here's Cherry last night, and he loves it. He loves seeing Char out there with Tarasenko every shift.
Came in with a four straight road wins and an .896 save percentage.
Now, here's the coach for Boston is doing a pretty smart thing. Every time Tarasenko, their best goal scorer, is on, he has Char on there. Now, watch, he jumps it in. He don't want any part of this. I'm not saying he's afraid. Who wouldn't be afraid? Watch, he picks up the puck here, throws it out in the middle. The next time, I think he really gets creamed. I mean, who wouldn't be this guy? But he hasn't been hitting anybody, Chara. But he knows every time Tarasenko's out there, he's got Chara there, and he is murdering him, as they say.
I love the Canadian accent that makes Chara.
He's not hitting him, but he's murdering him. So somehow,
Chara there.
It's a mental intimidation. Tarasenko is being mentally intimidated. I don't know. Is there something to that? That there's a Russian, Czech fear factor,
Slovak.
Like an Eastern European sort of, I'm going to get in your head, Tarasenko, and Chara's, that's why Chara's out there this round.
It wasn't in his head the first two games, I don't know what he's talking about.
How things change with one single game.
Yeah, and even last night, Chara didn't look that good.
Well,
I thought he looked pretty good last night.
Well, here
night.
It is.
Okay,
we'll go back to this. This is the thing that I'm trying to get through to Wiggy, right? You know, the guy was a tight end. How many times did he throw a good block or, you know, protect the passer and didn't get credit for it when he wasn't making catches? It's the same thing. This guy is out there. He led the team in ice time last night, right? So he's out there for all that time, all those shifts. Two or three are going to go haywire. Four is going to go haywire, whatever. It's a huge percentage of the times that he's not being caught screwing up that you need to focus on.
Yeah, there was only one time that I can remember him looking bad, and it was on the goal that went off of McAvoy's skates.
The Barbashev goal was a long cycle. He was caught out there for a long time.
He was sort of just shugged off behind the goal
And the
goal
penalty
lineup
he took on Gunnarsson, because it was kind of a dumb time to do that.
Right, right.
I thought
he came up high on
that St. Louis was going to get back into it, or even, you know, even the, if they had gotten a lot of confidence building toward the end of that, maybe cut it to, you know, 5-3 at some point or 5-4, that could at least carry over to the next game. Now at least you killed their confidence in that way. They're not going to have the momentum going next game. But taking the penalty there, I think you wait a little bit. If you really want to get somebody, and it's particularly if it's Gunnarsson, you wait and you tell Bruce Cassidy, you know, 3 minutes to go, I want to get out there against Gunnarsson. He won't ask why, and you just go out there and do what you got to do. It was kind of dumb to take it right then and there. And I think he knew what he was doing, too. You look at his face. He didn't argue it. He knew what he was doing.
but probably benefited from the extra day off as well. He'll get that again in this series. That's a nice thing to have.
And I think that's what I said. You know, after that game too, sure, the Blues had the same amount of recovery time, but the fact that they were the aggressors physically, it would definitely benefit the Bruins to get that extra rest and to rest and to kind of regroup and look at what they have to do better, and they did it.
And Bergeron doesn't look visibly injured, because I walked out of the stadium, the arena, with him Tuesday, and he was walking down steps. He looked fine. Yeah, he didn't talk to the media, but he walked across.
Could
the
Could be something
room.
In his core. Could be something with his shoulder. I mean, there's going to be, you know.
So you're speculating.
Plenty of stuff will come out. I mean,
he wasn't injured. Uh-huh. Now he's maybe injured.
Oh, could be the core. Could be the shoulder.
If you can play like you played last night, it's not that bad. That's my point. Maybe he's taking a shot. That's what these guys do. That's what you're supposed to do. I mean, everyone's hurt out there. I mean. The beating, we talked about the beatings Torrey Krug is taking. I'm sure he's a little banged up, you know.
He fractured his jaw.
That's what I said. Glenn was on that from the start.
What, all right. What was this? A fractured jaw?
Oh, it goes back many years. Oh, okay. I think that was a Mark. Who was that? It was a Isaiah Thomas injury. Speculation. Going back many years. It's Sunday Skate. It's the pre-show for Sunday Skate. This is the 7-8 hour.
Yeah.
We have three big hours today. I don't know who to thank for this. You actually were on the air 2 hours yesterday.
I've been on the air. This will be my seventh, eighth, and ninth hours of this week.
That's unbelievable. You have me to thank for it.
Absolutely.
All these hours.
I'll give credit where it's due, but it's about time that the station decided to have, you know, smart people on the air.
Why didn't they have Pete on yesterday? Did they reach out to Pete for Saturday? What happened there? Oh, that's not good. It's trending downward. But I want to keep Pete fresh for his Sunday morning.
Exactly.
Pete's moving. For some reason, the second year in a row, he's decided to move.
I think he went to bed later than me last night. So
yeah. I didn't decide to move.
Did you get out of bed and brush your teeth, though?
That's the question.
Did not.
He did not get out of his bed and brush his teeth.
I was forced.
Forced out
by my roommate.
Irate roommates.
Yes.
Roommate.
Yes.
Wow.
Not irate. His girlfriend's moving in.
Oh. So, ooh.
Yeah. I got the boot.
Before the end of the contract or no?
No. It's basically like an easy lease, basically.
Oh, okay. That's still a little rough, though.
Are you going to be on DJ's couch? What's going on?
No, here? I got a place.
Okay.
Oh, is that proper protocol? I guess so. You get a girlfriend. Was it your place first or his?
His place first. Right. So I have no problem.
Well, if you had Pete as your roommate, you'd want him out before your girlfriend shows up.
Totally.
Right?
So. Absolutely. Yep. Those glasses are fit to kill. All right. Coming up next, we'll hear some post games since we have kind of an extra bonus hour here. We'll hear from some podium sound.
Are we getting
Cassidy?
Guest.
Are we getting who?
We have a guest today?
Oh, yes, we do. The great Darren Pang is going to join us at 9:30 today. Panger was the TV analyst of the St. Louis Blues all season. I don't think he's doing things with them in the playoffs. I could be wrong.
I think they're probably doing pre and post. He seems to be traveling with the team. So, yeah, probably the Fox Sports.
I'm sure he saw it yesterday. We'll
just
talk
like
about
Jack Edwards. You know,
he's the best guy on the planet probably to ask about Jordan Binnington and how he's going to handle getting pulled. Yesterday, so that was
the last thing my son said to me before he went to bed last night was Jake Allen stinks, and next thing you know, Binnington's the one who stinks. So
Allen looked good. I thought maybe there's a goalie controversy brewing there.
Yeah,
there
might be.
Maybe they'll think about going to Allen. Who is your Conn Smythe favorite right now? Is it Tuukka Rask? Is it Don Cherry's guy Patrice Bergeron? Is it Torrey Krug rising the charts rapidly with a 4-point game? We'll tell you historically where that ranks and hear from Bruce Cassidy. After the win, and Krug for that matter, you can reach Sunday Skate at 617-779-7937. Ken Laird, Pete Blackburn, Matt Kalman, time for a trending now.
He's got Chera there, and he is murdering him, as they say.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Red Sox thankful the Bruins keep rolling, taking some of what would be a lot of angst and ire away from them. They fell to the Yankees again last night, 5-3 at the stadium, looking to avoid the sweep. Tonight in the Bronx, David Price on the mound, CC Sabathia for the Bombers. Catch the pregame with Will Fleming, 6:05. Joe Castiglione, Josh Lewin at 7:05 on the Shaws and Star Market, WEI Red Sox Radio Network. NBA Final continues. Game 2 is tonight, 8 p.m. tip, north of the border, Raptors and Warriors, Toronto. Against all odds with a 1-0 lead in that best-of-seven series. And of course, you know the Bruins blew out the Blues 7-2 last night, 4-for-4 on the power play, and a couple of empty net goals to finish strong. Game 4 in St. Louis tomorrow night 8 p.m. Weather in Boston, 54. Fog this morning, so be careful out there, as Mutt would say. More of Sunday Skate coming up.
Now back to a Stanley Cup Finals edition of Sunday Skate with Ken Laird, Pete Blackburn, and Matt Kalman on Sports Radio WEEI.
Retreat by Krug, finessed on to Marchand, finessed it right through to Krug, and here's Krug's shot. He scores! Krug, and it's 3-for-3 on the power play.
Eventually a 4-for-4 night. That Torrey Krug-Rister beating Jordan Binnington and pulling him, chasing him, I guess is the better phrase. Jake Allen came in after that. At that point, first time Binnington was out in the playoffs, but 5 goals allowed on 19 shots. Not really Binnington's fault. That one particularly was deflected before it went off his glove, so I don't think it was like a terrible goal. It was just sort of the accumulation of the night. What'd you guys think about that?
You can make a case that almost every goal he's given up, though, is kind of soft in some way, shape, or form, you know?
Well, the Corrali one was much worse, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, there's been...
He certainly hasn't been impressive.
There haven't been many snipes or, wow, how, you know, no chance on that one type plays, and imagine if it was reversed, what we'd be saying about Tuukka Rask and Halak right now. So you're saying a goalie controversy. I mean, clearly they're not going to do it at this point. I don't think they want to shake things. But like you said, I mean, with only one day off between games, you wonder if Binnington can recover that quickly. I mean, he probably needs an extra day at this point.
I will say his numbers are pretty good this year after a loss and after a bad performance.
Yep.
So he hasn't looked – but. That being said, he hasn't looked good in any of the 3 games throughout the series.
They talk about him being unflappable, and he's looked very flappable as far as emotions, too. I don't see the stoic Jordan Binnington. I kind of feel like maybe he's the next Hamburglar.
I expect him to melt down at some point by now. People keep talking about how flappable he is,
right,
and how hot-headed he is, but he hasn't really like gone Ron Hextall and chased anybody. He's had the one quote about Krug's pupils being, whether he was on something. I think Krug talks about that. We'll hear from his postgame coming up here in a second. But Krug with a 4-point night. Tell me if you're impressed by these factoids, these stats from afterwards. Goal and 3 assists. Sets the franchise record for points by any player in a Stanley Cup final game. The 9th defenseman in NHL history to record 4 points in a game during a cup final. The first since Brian Leetch 25 years ago. Denny Potvin, the only blue liner with 2 such performances. And he matched the Bruins' record for points by a defenseman in any playoff game, matching the total achieved by Bobby Orr, Brad Park twice, and Zdeno Chara. So he had just the 1 goal, 3 assists. They're all in the power play. They weren't like all dynamite, but I think all the assists, I think, were primary assists, including the one to Bergeron, which was really nice.
Right.
So was it like a magical night that you'll remember forever from Torrey Krug, this 4-point game, or just
no, I mean,
part
it kinda,
of the
to
machine?
Me, it kind of got buried. I mean, yeah, it's great, but it just got buried in the fact that that they played that the first line came to play a little bit there, and that the rest of the team played so well and rolled it out. And I think that's been the story of the playoffs, that one guy doesn't really stand out offensively like that.
What about you?
It's nice for him to hang his hat on the fact that he's the first player in Bruins history, which is a long history, a lot of Stanley Cup final games, to be able to say that he got 4 points is that's pretty surprising. But I don't think it's this like big thing. Honestly,
he's going to remember more for the hit in game one than he is the 4-point
night.
Yeah,
for sure. And maybe he'll remember the 4-point night more than anybody else. But I think that if you're going to take away a certain moment from the series, it's going to be the hit.
Right.
He has 16 points now, though, in the playoffs. That's the most by a Bruins defenseman in a playoff year since Ray Bourque in 1991 when he had 25 points.
Yeah.
So this is becoming a story in terms of production, just point blank. But only 2 of those are goals.
And just the biggest story is what we were talking about earlier is just the way he's played defensively and still has not been exploited by any of these teams, including this team that you think if anyone was going to do it is this team is among the 4 teams they played because of their bulk and their size on those bottom lines that he matches up against, and we haven't seen that happen.
Now, we talked about him actually before the playoffs started, I remember, because Fluto wrote a piece in The Athletic about his future, and I had him traded. I basically said, Krug's going to be traded before the draft this year. I think you agreed, because you agree with everything I say.
Absolutely not.
He's under contract for 1 more year at $5.25 million.
Yeah, I mean, I still hold the fact that I think not only do the Bruins want to keep him, but I think he is the type of guy, just like Pastrnak and Marchand, that will take... Yeah, he can go on the open market
after this run.
I agree with that part. I think that he's the kind of guy who will take less money.
He definitely puts himself in his... You're reading all this history. He is reveling in this because he's the type of guy that embraces this. The whole idea of being a Bruin and being part of history. And he, we know how close he's gotten with Ray Bourque off the ice these past few years. just entrenching himself in the organization here. I think if you promise, if you give him the years, he'll take less of a cap hit. Now, there's so many other issues. I mean, that story brought up the one thing that always, you know, throws me off is that the Seattle expansion nonsense.
Oh, right.
Where if you're keeping Carlo Krug and McAvoy, I think that's all you can do, right? 3D in the
you can choose
protect.
Eight players or something, or
right. So it gets difficult then. I mean, are you gonna do you wind up at some point losing a Grizzlick or you know a Vakanainen even when assuming by then he's playing, it's gonna get dicey expansion draft wise. Beyond other than that, I mean, people talk about what McAvoy and Carlo are gonna get in this next contract, and regardless of what they get, you can fit these guys in.
I mean, I assume that if you sign Krug to a new deal, he automatically gets protected in the. In the expansion draft,
oh, absolutely,
he's going
right.
to get a, he's going to get a no movement clause,
right? And that, but that's just what I'm saying. It's,
no, but you, I don't think that matters, though.
He's going to be, you know, it does matter, but he's going to be in his early 30s.
Well, you can't just sign guys. Everybody with a no movement clause, and then the expansion draft.
Well, no,
them all be exempt,
right? Because, but you're putting yourself in that position where you're going to have to. If you give no movement clauses to everybody, then you're
other
gonna,
NHL
you're
teams have
to
two options. They can protect 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, and a goaltender,
right?
Or 8 skaters and 1 goaltender,
right?
All first and second year players and unsigned draft choices are exempt, but that's it. So
right.
If you go with the, I'm going to protect 11 players, which most teams do, 7 forwards, 3D, and 1 goaltender. You're right. That's a, that's
right.
a major issue.
And like yeah. Pete said, if you give Krug a no trade, obviously he's one of the ones that can't be put on the, that can't be exposed.
Oh, you mean so you're now, saying the Bruins are forced then to name him one of your
yes.
players?
Right.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Right. So now you're
what happens if
so
you have
now,
multiple guys with. If you have 4 defensemen with no movement clauses,
then you have to go with the skaters, I suppose.
Right, you have to go with the skater.
Wow. Route. Okay.
And then you're talking about and then you're at the point where okay, let's say.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling. My size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop. All of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
He's going to be 31. Off the top of my head, I'm not looking at his ages right now. By the expansion draft, whatever age he's going to be early 30s. He's going to be on the back nine, so to speak.
He's 27.
And then you're
right
talking
now.
About okay, you're going to have to expose a Vakanainen or a Lauzon or someone or even a Grizzlick at that point. And then you know, do you really want to lose a good younger player at that point? But I mean, so he's 27 now, so he'll be like 29 at the expansion draft. I mean, I don't.
They have a tough decision.
Yeah,
with him.
But the way this defense corps is coming around, I mean. If you're going to keep a veteran with Carlo and McAvoy and Vakanainen and maybe Lauzon and Grizzlick as your you know 3 or 4 core guys, and I mean Krug can kind of slide into that Chara role as far as just being the veteran that makes a lot of money, and then you just piece everybody in around him. That's the way to go, and maybe it's worth it just to say, well, I mean, how long does Donnie Sweeney really have to? What's the shelf life on a GM these days, right? So let's say you win the cup now, or somehow you blow this, but you want to keep going for it in the immediate future.
Yeah.
So if you have a Torrey Krug,
what'd Shirelli get after 5 years after his cup win?
Right. So there you go.
5 years.
But you don't want to. You just don't want to. I don't remember what I was going to say. Now you interrupted me.
Sorry. Well, you're basically going for it, and you know Sweeney's right. going to say I'm not going to be here forever, so we're going to keep Torrey Krug, and they're not going to. I totally changed my mind now. After this cup run, yeah. They're not trading Torrey Krug.
That's just it. I mean,
they're at least going to ride him out.
He's that good. Okay, yep. So if you let him go or you trade him, you're going to be chasing the next Torrey Krug. That's what I'm trying to say here.
Yes.
It's like we figured out how they can survive without Chara. It's going to be a piecemeal thing where Carlo's going to handle the defensive part and McAvoy's going to handle the offensive part, and there's going to be enough guys here to take the ice time and get by without Chara in the post-Chara era. But the Torrey Krug thing is going to be hard to replace.
But conversely, if he does win Conn Smythe or he's even in the conversation,
yeah.
Trade value is at an all-time high.
Well, that's just it. It's an all-time high, and you have to wonder, too, his agent is Louis Gross. He's already been through one quote-unquote holdout. They don't call it that anymore, but he went through that when he was on that entry-level deal and was coming out of it. We know what Gross did with William Nylander this year. The guy drives a hard bargain. Can Donnie Sweeney look at it and say, okay, I know regardless of what Lewis Gross might be saying. Torrey Krug is a guy that loves it here. He picked here in the first place when he left college. He wants to be part of this organization. He wants to do a Pastrnak kind of deal. I mean, David Pastrnak said it to me, right? And everyone stole it. I don't play hockey for money, Matt. And so...
Which, man. By the way...
He said Matt.
By the way...
Just ask DJ.
By the way,
yeah,
insanely false. He may not play... He may not... It may not be his primary motivator,
exactly.
But he's making more than $6 million. Yeah. He's playing hockey for
absolutely.
Money.
Absolutely. Well, he was just trying to pull my leg. That's why it was even funnier that people were running that quote and people were telling me what a stupid question it was, but he was pretty much pulling my leg, you know?
But by the way, an executive told Fluto in this piece before the playoffs, guess is Torrey Krug will ask for 7 years, $6.25 million-ish per year.
There you go. That's perfect.
That's perfect?
I think that's a good value,
that's a good
number-wise.
I mean, yeah, seven years.
It's a long... But you're paying for the lower cap
exactly.
number.
Exactly. And again, if you're
with the years.
If you're Donnie Sweeney, are you going to be here in 7 years if you don't have Torrey Krug to win you some more cups?
And
so.
And you look at the player that Torrey Krug is. He's smaller. He's not super
right.
physical. He's offensively minded. I mean, how long did Brian Leetch play till?
Right.
Late.
Exactly.
So, I mean, if he's 27 right now and you're going just into mid-30s with that deal, I think that I'm fine with that.
And even if he's the type of guy, if he keeps up, obviously he's going to maintain his skills. If he gets to 32 and there's a few years left and he's just a third pair D power play specialist,
right.
What's the difference? You're not going to overtax this guy. Hmm. And we've seen, Grislyk did a decent job when Krug was hurt this year of being that power play guy once he got comfortable with it. So difficult to replace him on the power play, and you can't overestimate his value to the 50% power play that's been in the playoffs and in the great power play they had all year. And when you think back to how they won the cup without a power play, and now how much easier life is when you have one that's so potent.
He's so key.
His value is so much better, and he's so great. I think the biggest thing is at the ad-libbing. When these teams get their number and people start doing the, what's wrong with the power play because they didn't score. Like, they would go for 0-3 in one game, and everyone's saying that. He manages to find those adjustments as much
yep.
as the coaching staff, I believe, because he does it in-game and gets the puck, and you see him looking around and figuring. He's kind of like a quarterback calling an audible at the line so many times on the entries and then on the plays that they make once they're in.
He would get my Conn Smythe vote right now.
Yeah, the Conn Smythe thing is kind of silly because it's almost always the goalie to start with, right? I mean, you're going back even to the year the Ducks lost and they still gave it to Jaguar, right? So it's like you look at the Conn Smythe. There's no doubt that Torrey Krug, Brad Marchand, all have had MVP stretches of these playoffs, but it's going to be Tuukka Rask. I think we're all talking about who's going to be second place because even if Tuukka had two
right.
bad games and they win,
I think
he's going to be the
Tuukka's first three rounds were so good that
right.
that if they were going to win, they're going to win this series. It's not going to be in spite of Tuukka, so
true.
He's
true.
Going to
and,
win.
And we know. I mean, last year to me is the perfect example that so many people would agree with me that Kuznetsov was the MVP, but you knew they were giving it to Ovechkin because that's the story.
And Marchand has no chance because the media just hates
exactly.
him.
Exactly. I mean, Kyle with the hair is going to be,
he's going to vote for him.
He's going to run the anti-Marchand campaign there.
No, so I think if anybody else wins it, it's recency bias because Tuukka Rask was their MVP through the three rounds.
Right, yeah.
Sunday Skate continues. We rambled too long. We'll hear from Krug and Cassidy coming up next here in the pre-show of Sunday Skate, the big 2 hours coming from 8 to 10. It's Laird, Kalman, and Blackburn.
Now back to a Stanley Cup Finals edition of Sunday Skate with Ken Laird, Pete Blackburn, and Matt Kalman on Sports Radio WEEI.
Two-1 series lead for the Bruins. Game three winners have gone on to win the Stanley Cup 78.6% of the time since introduced in 1939. That's 22 out of 28. However, one of those was the Bruins going up 2-1 and losing in 2013.
That's right.
So
Tuca's fault.
Not over yet, although last night feels so definitively embarrassing or... Bennington getting pulled, I guess, is not the end of the world. As you guys have said, Bennington's had the ability to come back and bounce back, as have the Blues. But the special teams edge is so lopsided, and now with the top line of the Bruins going, they feel significantly the better team.
Yeah, and you know what, too? I think I didn't really get into this too much in my story today, but everyone talks about the getting off to a good start. They're always asked about, yo, do you want to have a good start? Of course they want to have a good start. I never heard a team say we don't want to have a good start. But luckily, this team is smart enough to not say put too much value in a good start, as much as their coach likes to say be on time. They didn't obviously put too much emphasis on that first 5 minutes, since it didn't really go their way until the power play and the goal. So I think that was a huge turning point too, was that they didn't get discouraged after those, just like the Carolina game three too, like I was saying before. They didn't put too much emphasis on that, and it got them through because they were able to withstand that storm, as they like to say.
Yeah, the Blues have won some big home games, but they've all kind of been the clinchers. They've lost.
They're under 500 now at home, right? They're 5-6 at home.
Right. So they've done most of their early series.
So much for that raucous atmosphere and John Hamm and, oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, the building was going.
Yeah, but every building's going. I mean, to me, the only real home ice advantage, crowd thing I've ever seen would be when the Bruins in the early Claude Juniors, when they first made the playoffs and they were playing Montreal first round. I mean, that place is the loudest place by far, right? It's the most people in an arena. They all get there in the seats 20 minutes, 30 minutes early. They are the loudest crowd by far. And you get there, that really affects you, especially if you're a rookie. I remember seeing so many of the Bruins, whether they were rookies or just, early in their careers, playoff-wise, get really overwhelmed by it. But since then, you don't really see a building in the National Hockey League making that big of a difference. And they're 5-6 there, so obviously it's not helping them.
No, I mean, the bigger advantage is last change, which can be a boring thing to say. It's a cliche, but if it's a serious matchup series, that could be a factor. In this series, it hasn't changed at all, right? Top line is matching top line.
Right, I mean, that's...
Both coaches are just...
Right, well, for the most part, that's what Bruce Cassidy has learned to do after Game 1 Toronto. He said he's let his team roll, and especially on the road, it's worked to their favor. They're 7-2 on the road, and they're just out there playing. They're loose, and they trust everyone, and they're not scrambling to get matchups, and it's worked out great.
Let's hear a little bit from the coach. Bruce Cassidy talked at length after the game. He's a good post-game quote. He just, compared to Berube, who's just a total cement head. He says nothing. His players play like that.
1,000 penalty minutes or whatever he took will have an effect on you. I mean, geez.
Cassidy is a breath of fresh air. Here's Bruce last night.
Prolonged as they did in game two, what were you guys doing in the neutral zone to perhaps reduce how much they were getting to it in game two?
Well, we're a little tighter in general, but I just think we did a better job getting back on pucks. Four guys that weren't the first to touch it made sure they supported well, whether it was a little bump. We mixed in some long rims. You got to win those battles, get them to the neutral zone, start your forecheck there, create a few turnovers. That worked out well for us a lot. So credit the wingers, doing a good job on the boards. I thought Tuca's touches were excellent, allowed us a little more time. So sometimes it comes down to puck placement, Fluto, and I think tonight, clearly we were able to get back on it, make some decent plays from where it was placed. So a little more ozone time in the first period. You get a lead. That puts teams on their heels a little bit. So I think there was a number of different things that led to why we were better in that area.
Coach, over here, a lot of guys on your team have been there and done that. How much do you think that experience and that championship pedigree, if you will, allowed you to absorb what the early crowd noise and all of that and allowed you to win?
Well, a lot. I mean, listen, every building's loud this time of year, typically full. We live that in Columbus. We lived it in Toronto, lived it in Carolina. Not to this magnitude of the finals, but that's where our veteran guys have in Vancouver and Chicago in years past. So they kind of set the lead for that. We still had some young guys late in the second period there. We, got a little cute, I think, where that's where the understanding of our veteran guys rub off on them, how to play the right way, how to play winning hockey. So we got away from it a little bit. as the game wore on, but give them credit. They're going to have their push. But early on, we were ready to play. And I felt we would be because of the guys that have been here and done it, because we tend to respond well after a loss. So did I think we'd score 3 goals in the first period? No, but I thought we'd be ready to play and at least, you know, be in the game, be a competitive first period. They happened to go in for us.
Bruce, during the long layoff that you guys had, you were talking about Torrey, and one of the words you used was you thought he was underappreciated at that point. Do you think he's still underappreciated?
Well, hopefully not in Boston. Certainly not in our locker room. Never has been, but I think that when I said that, it was in the context of he's an offensive defenseman, he's a power play specialist, and I think people don't realize how hard he is when he wants to play that, you know, a physical game. And he does play big minutes now lately against good players with Carlo. That's something that changed a little bit. We used Grizzlich in that role a little bit last year. Johnny Moore had some of it earlier. So Torrey stepped up, and he wanted that responsibility, be a second pair type guy behind Z playing good lines. And he's met the challenge. And that's where I was saying, like, I think he's done a really good job that might fly under the radar because he's still getting his points in the power play and making plays.
See, that's what I'm talking about, like these media members that just drop in for the Stanley Cup final. I mean, yeah. Celebrity drop-ins, you know. Penny Marshall came back from the grave to ask a question there. I couldn't believe it.
That was a good question. 22:09, the ice time for Torrey Krug in the performance last night. So he's not just he was their fourth most penalty minutes guy in the regular season. He has elevated way past that.
Yeah, I mean, in the Char missed game four against Carolina, he played 27 minutes.
And there was a John Moore reference in there, and were there, 5-1 with him in the lineup now?
Oh, there you go. He might be kind of good, Ken. You never know.
He's not good, but he's not worth the contract he was signed
what is,
for.
What do you mean he's not worth the contract? He's worth the price. That contract is as a John Moore contract, $2.75 million. That's the Adam McQuaid slot.
Not playing. He got outplayed. Their intention with that contract was you're our sixth defenseman. He got beat out for that role.
Well,
he's become a valuable insurance guy.
He's an insurance guy. Maybe someday, maybe he'll be appealing to Seattle.
$2.75 million for an insurance guy.
For a seventh defenseman, right?
And be locked into him.
But
for
it's
the
so
next
tradable too.
Years.
There's no movement on it. It's they could trade him. I mean,
here's our guy
like
that's
saying,
not playing. Take him off our hands.
Well, no, he's serviceable. As he showed last night, he's a guy that maybe should be playing. But they've got guys
well
that played.
There
him
are
out.
A lot of teams.
He didn't lose
bad
his job by default.
Groups that could
exactly
that could use John
including
Moore.
You never
for
know
$3 million
down the road. It might be Seattle that wants to take him off your hands. It might be the perfect bait. To get them
Seattle
to take him,
will not take John
yeah,
Moore off
have,
your
they're
hands.
They're going to have more enticing
are,
options
are you high?
On this roster.
They're going to have Carlo, Vaakanainen, Krug.
Unless John Moore,
those guys
like McAvoy
be,
and...
Unless
well,
John Moore really comes into his
Grizzlick.
Own next year. I don't think
well,
John
Moore is
going
can,
to
you
Seattle.
You can entice them with a draft pick or something to get him.
God, you first Cam Neely, now John Moore. You're on the
John Moore is going in the Hall of Fame for sure. Best seventh defenseman I've ever seen.
I
you know,
did
back
like
to the
call
you want
last
to bring
night.
A, you know, the Cam Neely thing.
Oh, here we go.
Okay, let's beat this dead horse.
No, save this because you actually wrote an interesting column last night.
Oh, wow, thank
the
you.
The dirty St. Louis Blues.
They're dirty. They're headhunting.
Evidence from Calvin.
The number one thing. Oh, okay, coming
that's
up.
Coming up next.
Oh, all right, the tease.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.